Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and this is just a short intro into my next podcast, which is essentially around the fairest process for promotion. So it's a big topic, but the context of that was that yesterday there was a post on LinkedIn by the Chief Constable of Difford Parish Police, Dr. Richard Lewis, in which he put a photograph of an interview table, and he asked the question, what techniques work to ensure we get the best out of candidates in these situations, and how should we strike a balance between performance in an interview and performance in candidates' current roles? And I thought that was quite topical. It's the thing that kind of inspired me to do this podcast, because in light of the Police Federation of England and Wales' recent pay and morale survey, a lot of people were dissatisfied with promotion prospects. Many were saying that promotion's not fair. And I just wanted to kind of pick up on the comment by the Chief Constable on LinkedIn and all the comments that followed afterwards, and just have a look at what process is fair around the zeitgeist, if you like, of what's happening with police promotions. It's always one that's guaranteed to get lots of interest. It's an emotional topic. It does affect people's careers, and that's why it's an important issue. So this is important in terms of your leadership aspirations, and this episode of my Police Promotion Leadership podcast is about giving you insights into your CPD on the go, wherever you may be listening, and this episode is relevant to your police leadership and promotion ambitions as an aspiring candidate, because the fairness around processes, the processes themselves, and you'll be supporting people entering those, whatever they look like in policing, and they are changing, they do change. It is a bit of a lottery out there. But in the interim, if you've got something interesting to say on policing and promotion or leadership, if you want to just get in touch with me to arrange an interview, I'm happy to share my platform if you've got a story to tell, either by writing a guest blog post, which can be anonymous if you wish, and or recording a verbal message to feature as a guest podcast. I'm always happy to share my platform to promote a diverse range of perspectives in policing whilst creating informative content for you. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. For info in a moment, I'll be giving you a quick overview of the support that Rank Success offers aspiring cops and the benefits of becoming a podcast subscriber, and then we'll get straight into the episode, and you can let me know your views in the Q&A on the podcast notes. At Rank Success, I'm committed to giving you the best police leadership development, levelling the playing field of promotion, whatever your budget and wherever you are. I invite you to explore my free blogs at policepromotion.blog and videos on my YouTube channel. There's topical police news, salary information, deep dives into diversity, CVF explainers, explanations of promotion assessments, and various aspects covering your police leadership and ongoing CPD. All this content will firstly help you become a better police leader, and then secondly, succeed in your promotion process. To go further, you might consider becoming a subscriber of my podcast. Not only will you be supporting the free content I create for others, but for just $4.99 a month, you'll also get extra subscriber-only episodes. You'll be the first to access all new episodes and have access to the best of my back catalogue, whilst also getting an exclusive 25% discount on my market-leading promotion materials. There's no commitment, and you can cancel any time. Want to smash your promotion with tried and tested prep? If you've got an upcoming board or you just want to get ahead of the competition now, consider my structured, succinct, and rank-specific toolkits. These help focus your effort on the right things, including examples of what good evidence looks like, explainers of the CVF, plus a myriad of other essential content to help you achieve your aspiration. Others have described these materials as a godsend, like gold dust, helping to tame the monsters in your mind, and have even stated there's nothing else like it. See countless more testimonials on my website from successful cops who took action and got in touch. There's e-guides, my professional recorded masterclass video, plus my in-depth CVF explainer video, or indeed special bundle offers on everything. Or come join me for an all-inclusive day on my next in-person promotion masterclass. All this and more is available from my main website at ranksuccess.co.uk, and the return on investment will come in your first month's salary increase alone. So that's an overview of what I can do for you. And without further ado, let's get into today's podcast. Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success, and this is a podcast in relation to, surprise, surprise, the topic of police promotion and essentially the zeitgeist, so the current situation, the existing conditions, the circumstances around promotion, particularly in English and Welsh forces, but also police service in Northern Ireland. And to a certain extent, it does extrapolate across different forces. And the inspiration for this particular podcast was a post on LinkedIn yesterday by the Chief Constable of Dyfed Powys Police, Dr. Richard Lewis. And it was really interesting because he posted a picture of an interview table. I'm not sure whether that's his office. It looks like it is. I can't see the label on the door. But he's posted a picture of an interview table with one seat on one side and, you know, three seats on the other. So, you know, conjuring up this interview, this panel interview scenario. And he's actually said, we've all been in this situation, right? Sat on either side of a table as an interviewer or interviewee. And it can be daunting, excuse me. And yet those that wish to progress often need to place themselves in these situations. When you have great candidates, which we do, then an interview can help to make a decision, but it doesn't always feel adequate in and of itself. What techniques work to ensure we can get the best out of candidates in these situations? And how should we strike a balance between performance in an interview and performance in candidates' current roles? So on the face of it, that's a brilliant question. It's clearly triggered a lot of comments. I think the last time I had a look, there were about 65 comments on that LinkedIn post from people within policing, from outside policing. And I think it's entirely relevant and current to be asking those kind of questions. And it's triggered a lot of contributions where people giving and sharing their thoughts, which is exactly what was invited, really. But I think the devil sometimes is in the detail, and a lot of people have shared what doesn't work and their thoughts around what doesn't work and why it doesn't work and why other things should be trialled. And the reality is, from my perspective, which is one perspective, having supported police officers through their careers, certainly through the federated ranks, there are others that have gone on, having first come on to my masterclasses or bought my promotion products. There are lots and lots of people who have been through different processes in policing. And I'm talking about over the last decade since I started doing this. So I'm just coming up to a decade of doing it now. And I think the context is really important here. Who are you actually interviewing and what are you actually interviewing them for? And I think that just sets some closer, tighter guidelines, because it's not always about rank. It can be about the role or the position. So, for instance, if you're interviewing someone to work in special branch or certainly a managerial police role in special branch, that person's going to be interviewed. There may well be some other elements to a selection process, but that post is a sensitive post. It's one in which you should be interviewed. And that's one where you want to actually be able to look someone in the eyes and see whether they're congruent. Is what you're seeing, what you're getting? Are they behaving in a way that, you know, the paper version of them suggests, and what else you know? There are reasons for interviewing. And I think when you're interviewing people for promotion, the argument around what that process should be has been going on for a long time now. And I can recall, you know, certainly Osprey, and all the same arguments. So, you know, let's all run around in a big circle, adding in our kind of 50p's worth around why Osprey was bad, why it wasn't relevant, why it wasn't current, why it didn't reflect scenarios. And shoot forward 10 years and you've now got people saying, should we do more of that? Should we be doing more of replicating what the roles actually do, what the day current role actually does? And although that was very much a kind of role play type based thing, and all those kind of processes, whether it's interviews, presentations, briefings, whatever the components or elements or constituent parts of a selection process, they're all contrived to a certain extent. So, you know, someone has to put them together in a way that's fair, meaningful, and assesses the relevant. And there's good intent behind all of this. You know, no one's suggesting for a minute that all the different selection processes going on right now in 53 different forces or 55 or 43, however many you believe there are, all those different processes, I've written blogs about those called the promotion lottery, the postcode lottery of police promotion selection processes, and I see it happening all the time. And I get calls every week. And people often email me and ask me, Steve, we've got this presentation, it's going to be on this. And we have a discussion around what that best model for that might be, the thinking that might support you going into an assessment centre where a presentation or a briefing is part of the selection. But I just wanted to kind of zoom back to the start beginning of this post by the Chief Constable. And just say, is it about that context? It is about the context about who you're interviewing. And when you consider the broadest end of the pyramid, high numbers, lots and lots of people applying for vacancies and this element of competition. And that's a word that I find people don't have ideas to address. Where you've got 600 people, for example, going for 100 vacancies, so 600 aspiring sergeants going for 100 vacancies that the force has available, how do you fairly and meaningfully filter and sift those individuals down to get the people that should be going forward to other elements of the process, whether that's an interview or not? And not all forces interview for sergeants. I think it's Thames Valley Police have tried inspectors as well, and then brought it back in. And if you have a listen to my podcast interview with ACC Katie Barrow-Grint, I think she shed some more light on that. And so, you know, some forces don't interview for sergeants and they do a work-based assessment. Some forces, I think it was Devon and Cornwall recently, and I don't know all the reasons, but apparently they didn't have enough people going. So all the people that applied and did applications and were expecting a promotion board, they were actually allowed to go through, get promoted and be developed in the role, in the rank through work-based assessment. And that's okay with the numbers are okay, but if you come back to the point of competition, how do you deal with that? How do you actually fairly do that? And this is where I go back 10 years to when I first started this. I think it was the Metropolitan Police were using situational judgment tests to paper sift people. It was an online test where, you know, it reflects the situation that perhaps a sergeant or an inspector would face. So, you know, here's a situation. What is the right response in this situation, all things considered? And it's generally designed to mimic or reflect the requirements of the role. In-tray or e-tray exercises are the same. They're role-based, relevant tasks. And you know, here's the thing. It doesn't really matter what test you use to assess people for promotion. Nobody likes it, or many people don't like the fact that they're being tested. And you will always get vast cohorts of people who are not good at those particular tests saying it's not relevant, it's not current, it doesn't reflect the role, it's not fair, and a whole list of other excuses. So I was quite interested to see that post and to see the comments that were attracted by it, because within those comments are lots of good ideas. There are some in there that are not such good ideas and clearly reflect the fact that people have not been in policing for a while. Although some of the observations in there do reflect the history leading up to where we are, the current zeitgeist, if you like. So reflecting and mentioning and alluding to different processes. And I think also on this, you know, you can assess people, you can bring people in, whether you interview them or not. And sometimes it costs money, and forces do the best they can to recruit and also to select and promote individuals. But there's always a budget.
Forces do experiment and trial and test things with good intent to try and get the best people. And there are always vast cohorts of people standing on the sidelines to criticise that. So with all these good ideas that came in on this timeline, around suggestions, around alternative processes, you know, there's people alluding to PDRs, paper sifts, interviews, and a vast combination. Well, as I alluded to earlier on, all those things currently exist. It depends which force you're in as to what selection process you face for a promotion, and not always an interview as part of that. But as I alluded to earlier on, whether it is an interview, whether it's a paper sift, whether it's an application, whether it's a presentation, a briefing, an operational scenario, in my experience, and it is just my experience, I appreciate that is anecdotal, although if you pop across and have a look at the testimonials on my site, ranksuccess.co.uk, you will see that quietly, in the background, people just get on with it as best they can. And you will also see that those that commit to those processes take the time to learn, they take the time to plan and to research. And if it's something they're not familiar with, like a situational judgment test, like an inductive reasoning test, like an ETRE exercise, all of which have been used to select supervisors, they don't like them, but they spend some time practicing them. It's new, it's foreign. They're not used to it. They can't see the relevance, but they understand it will be part of the process. And I think that's when people then come out of the other side of a selection process and realise they've just put themselves through a transformational learning and growth experience, which is all part of the journey. And when you look back on it, it doesn't really matter whether it was an interview or whether it was a combination of other tests. There will always be a process that's required, not least for that competitive element that I was talking about earlier on. So that word competition, to my understanding, still hasn't been dealt with yet. And it's about understanding and accepting the reality of the situation that certainly in some of the big forces, there are far, far more officers going for promotion than there are vacancies available. That's not always the case, but it's often the case. And so therefore, you know, somewhere along the line, people have to come up with a process. I've done blogs on frameworks. There's a free downloadable guide you can download from my site about frameworks. And again, over the last 10 years, I've seen the Integrated Competency Framework, the Metropolitan Leadership Framework, the Metropolitan Performance Framework, the policing professional framework, the competency and values framework, you name it, officers have been promoted through it. But they had to get used to it first. They had to understand it. And, you know, I don't make those rules up. I mean, that's for the College of Policing and, you know, other people involved in policing who look at what's needed in the zeitgeist at the time. And the CVF, in their wisdom, is the current show in town. So you can either stand on the sidelines and, you know, as I've done a podcast before or a blog, I can't remember which one it is, whinging, whining, moaning and complaining. Will that get you promoted? No, it won't. But it does affect the zeitgeist sometimes. So what do I mean by that? Applications. It's a test of your written communication. Interviews, amongst other things, are a test of your verbal communication. And both of those skills are important for supervision, leadership, management, and, you know, being a police officer, certainly working in the context of problem solving, operational policing, partnership working. So unsurprisingly, those are the kind of things that are tested. It doesn't help when you have something like the Competency and Values Framework, which, you know, consistently fails, in my respectful observation, to garner the loyalty and the faith of those that are entering into a promotion process. For some reason, it appears to confuse and bemuse people, which is why in my digital guides, you know, I took the tack of, I can't work with the way it is, with the way it's presented. So therefore, here's how I presented it and redesigned it from the ground up in my own way in order to understand it. And that's what I encourage people to do, is make it meaningful to you in your own way. So there are coping strategies, there are ways to get through this. And just to come back to the whole point around the initial post by the Chief Constable around it being interviews, and is it the best way to strike a balance between, you know, the performance in the interview and performance in the candidate's current role? I think whatever the process is, yes, it should be a balance of those two things. So you will have things like performance and development reviews, PDRs. And again, I've written detailed blogs on those, and they're not generally done properly or consistently in forces. And if you can't get that right, how can you then get someone to a point where they can be recommended and supported for promotion? So in the absence of that, where it's not always an essential component or required component of application for the process, because it's not match fit, because not everybody has a PDR, then they'll open up the process to things like write a letter to the Chief Constable saying why you should be promoted and why now. You know, what skills and attributes have you got that mean you should be considered for promotion right now? It's a fair test. That's a fair requirement. To change that, sometimes it's an expression of interest. It might also be a formal full competency application where you have to supply evidence against each of the 6 CVF competencies and the 4 CVF values, or the 4 bespoke values for your force. And there's another thing, you know, each force is coming up with its own values at the moment. And I have candidates ringing me saying, do I have to evidence the 4 values of the CVF as it's stated by the College of Policing? Or do I have to do 8 values because our force has got some of its own? And it's real basics like that, that people, they just want to know, what if I'm going to face an interview, what does a good interview have in it? Or what should I be saying? What should I be thinking? How should I approach it? And all of these things are legitimate questions. Many of those are answered in my digital toolkits, which is why they help facilitate people's success. And with that, when I say facilitate people's success, some people say, well, you can pay to be taught to pass an interview. I think that's probably a true statement. I think you probably can somewhere, but it's certainly not what I do. It's certainly not what I would expect people to kind of approach me and rank success with, because that they would be disappointed, because I can't teach anybody to pass an interview. It's not what I do. It's not the approach I take. The approach I take is more of a Socratic approach, which is, you know, I can't teach you anything, but I can make you think. And I can make you think, and I can support your thinking, and I can challenge your thinking, and I can respectfully provoke your thinking, because that's what you'll be doing in the interview chair. That's what you'll be doing as you plan and prepare for your interview, or your assessment process, or your briefing, or your presentation. So sometimes it's just a supportive conversation, which they can't always get from the force, or people within the force, or if they do, they go around asking too many people and end up getting confused or being given guidance, advice, or tips or insights relevant to last year's process. So it's very much around giving yourself a good run-up for a promotion selection process. So I quite like the question around striking a balance between performance in an interview and performance in a candidate's current role. And I think if those were a set of scales, I think performance in a candidate's current role should kind of tip it, and the interview should be just an indication. Are you congruent with what everything else we see? Is there that integrity there? And so, you know, the weighting of an interview could be perhaps a little bit lighter, but then I keep coming back to this competition. What if everybody else in the process does everything really good, really well, and beyond expectations? You know, the difficult decisions then fall to command teams and to HR teams to draw a line, and they literally do that, draw a line and say, I'm sorry, you might have passed last year, you were good, but this year there are many people who were better, and some people who were best. And they came above you on the line. And that brings into, you know, context the issue or the theme of fairness, which again crept through a lot of the comments in relation to this. Well, let's scrub around that straight away. It's not fair. Promotion isn't fair. Those people with drive and energy and enthusiasm and determination and that willingness to go get and get a grip on things. And not everybody's like that in life. It doesn't mean to say they're going to be good leaders, but these people pick themselves up. They've perhaps got more time than other people. They can use their time better. They may have more money to invest in themselves, into other resources. You know, life's not fair. You've got lots of policies to be fair. There's lots of processes to ensure fairness. But at the end of the day, you get assessed by humans, you get assessed by these processes, and all you can do is do the best you can to try and mirror those processes and make yourself match fit to get through them. And then when you're through them, do something about it. Try and change things from within. But just coming back to some of these comments that are in this and just going through a couple of them. Some people are saying that, you know, one of the biggest factors of pushing people out is the promotion lottery. People who do want to get on, people who do want to advance their careers and progress their careers, cannot get to grips with the police promotion process. And I think that's just part of the churn. You know, I don't think there's anything that would change that. You're certainly not going to get, you know, the Holy Grail. There is no such thing as the Holy Grail of the perfect promotion selection process. But there's lots of comments in these in the reply to this post where, you know, if interviews are necessary, they will be to highlight the very best. And then a series of interviews need to be conducted, recorded and evidenced. That's one of the kind of little lines in there. And again, that makes me think, who are these comments designed at? Because if you look at the widest end of the pyramid, you've got sergeants, then you've got inspectors, then chief inspectors, then superintendents and beyond. So the greatest numbers are there, and the greatest support, I suppose, is required for sergeants. Is it there? Is it there yet? If you look at some of the research from America and some of the observations from America, you know, newly promoted sergeants need 80 hours of basic management support and guidance. You know, they need to learn how to become managers if they haven't done that before. Yes, you can do some of that practically and operationally. Yes, you can do some of that through theory and through perhaps online courses. But also, what about watching people enroll? And one of the suggestions is watch people, you know, over a consistent period so that you can assure yourself that they aren't presenting as something they aren't. So that congruence point again. Speak to people they work with, not just a select few, and assess their performance in a pressurized situation, dealing with a live job, for example, rather than an interview. Again, that's brilliant if you've got the resources. If you've got the resources, let's just say you had a team of work-based assessment professionals, whatever rank, whatever role, whatever skill set they need to have, and their sole mission, their sole job was to go around forces assessing and supporting you know, sergeants through work-based assessment, and to be able to do that properly, that would probably carry more weight, I think. And that would probably be fairer to people. Reality, let's return straight back to reality. That hasn't happened. It might happen in fits and starts. And someone might turn around and say, well, actually, that is the case in our force. But generally, you've got people wearing other hats, or they haven't got the time to be able to do this en masse, or to the level of quality to have that confidence in it that should be there. And guess what? Even when they do that, there's still going to be cohorts on the sidelines saying, well, you know, they got treated differently to the other people, they get treated differently in that force to this force. And so, you know, when you come back to thinking about what the actual gateway, the rite of passage should be, if you like, the test, the balance of assessment for sergeants particularly, because they're the most important rank. Let's just take that perspective. They're the most important rank, and they will go on to be inspectors and chief inspectors. So if they feel supported and they get filtered through and supported, signposted, directed through a good process, then, you know, hopefully they'll pick up the ball. And as with the College of Policing's leadership review and number one recommendation, that all existing leaders drive their own development or take responsibility for their own CPD, you would hope to see that going hand in hand as well. So some people in those comments talk about, you know, what it's like in the private sector. And again, I think it's something lost in the thread of this. They're all very good comments, but I think something's lost in the thread of this around who it is that's supposed to be interviewed. The one I did like in there around comments was, you know, we make big investments in, you know, in cars, in firearms, in public order, and you only get a short return on service of those, and they've all got continuous professional development, you know, accreditation. But when you're looking at people at the start of their careers, they've got to be worth the investment. They have to be worth the investment. How much does it cost in pounds, shillings and pence to support a new sergeant, a keen, you know, enthusiastic, aspiring sergeant who wants to get on? They've got all the right makings and they want to get on and learn and grow and develop. You know, how is policing getting me on supporting them other than, you know, I think SIP is one of the things in the air at the moment in terms of the zeitgeist. I don't think we could talk about the zeitgeist of promotion selection processes. Lots of people saying what's wrong with it. And we're now looking at, or the College of Policing rather, are proposing the sergeants and inspectors progression and promotion scheme, in which they remove the exam from, certainly from the front end of the process, the legal exam, the gold benchmark standard that has been for years and years. So that's a pretty seismic change. And perhaps bolting something on the end of it, whether that's a knowledge test or a reduced syllabus exam, still a formal exam. But when you think about that, you know, what are the reasons for that? Well, it's proposed as a barrier. Well, of course it's a barrier. It's a standard. And I think, you know, there's a whole separate argument around standards. Are standards, you know, arguably being dropped when you talk about something as locked in as that? But then you've also got the need to change. Policing has always responded to change. Policing has to reflect the communities that it serves. And so therefore, change is sometimes, you know, always knocking at the door. And whether we like it or not, at the moment, things like SIP, or the SIP is proposed to be trialled, certainly this year, I think. And over the next couple of years, it will be taken to National Police Chiefs Council as a proposal, if there's any proposals come out of it. Or, of course, it might just die a death. It might never live to see the light of day after the pilot, or pilots in the forces. I think there's about half a dozen, seven or eight forces that are trialling it at the moment. So it might never see the light of day. And yet, when you think about things as pilots, as trials, generally, they are supported to the max. They're funded. You know, there's an investment in them. They cannot be allowed to fail sometimes. So will SIP not be allowed to fail? I don't know. But it certainly poses an alternative to some of these assessment processes and throws open the prospect of, you know, removing that barrier of the exam, if we want to use that, and allowing more people to access work-based assessment. But whatever that work-based assessment looks like, you know, you might have questions around, well, how's that going to be funded? Where's the money going to come from that? Are they going to be funded in a way that's not just, you know, or supported in a way that's not just generic? Pop online, fill out these sequence of forms and this portfolio work, do it all yourself, and then get someone in your force to come along and, you know, quality assure it or assess it. And then you are a sergeant. None of this means that you are essentially a good leader, good at the role. But it does mean that at that particular time when you were assessed, you know, you met the standard. There's the word standard again. So what are the standards? Will there be a pass and fail to this? Because everybody understands pass and fail. It doesn't come any less clear than that. You know, a pass or a fail is a benchmark. So how will you do that? How will that sit? So lots and lots and lots of thoughts that whizzed off and were triggered in my head by this post. The competition thing is the big one. Other people in this have talked about, you know, the army, the military, and can we do more of what the military do? Well, the police are not the military. I've talked about some of that in some of my podcasts. The police are not the military, and thank heavens for that. The fact they reflect the military through some of the rank badges and the structures and the hierarchy, great, but the further we can be away from that, the better. And yet people say, well, in relation to promotion, for instance, could you imagine if the army made the junior Brecon a CVF interview? And that's one of the comments in which I think they're conflating the military with that, because clearly, you know, a junior non-commissioned officer test is different to having the CVF interview. The competency and values framework for policing is different to the military framework and consequences. And I'm not even going to get into fitness tests and all that malarkey with comparisons. I think policing is policing, the military is the military. And, you know, I'd be more than happy to have conversations around that. I quite like the ideas of it, but I don't think it's relevant at the moment in the context of this. But I do like the fact that, you know, people engaged with this comment in a way that has lots and lots of good ideas in there. Now, there's another comment in there that I think interviews around the CVF are not fit for purpose, particularly for promotion, one of the comments says. And this individual alludes to being acting as a sergeant for a long period of time. But at the end of an 8-month-long promotion process featuring an expression of interest with workshops, paper application and interview, and then the result, they fell at the last hurdle. And that's where the fairness, the demoralisation of it comes into it, particularly when people prepare over a long period of time and they're unsuccessful. But in a way, sometimes doesn't that show the value of a process? You can't have everybody passing every time. As I say, there's got to be some way of having a standard that's worth having in place. So at the risk of kind of going on and repeating myself, I'd encourage you, if you're on LinkedIn, to whip across and have a look at that. There's lots, that post by the Chief Constable, there's lots and lots of comments in there. But as I say, it doesn't really matter that, to me, in as much as when, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. So if it's an application, which I alluded to earlier on, there's a cacophony that kicks off in a force where people say, you know, we don't like applications. We haven't got time to do them. They're not relevant. We don't want to do them. Federation, can you have a word with the Chief Constable? We don't like it. We don't like it. We don't like it. And the Chief Constable say, okay, that's fine. Fine. We won't have them. And everyone goes, yay. You're going to have a situational judgment test instead, in its step. Oh, no, hang on a minute. We don't like that. We don't like that either. So it might be a case of be careful what you wish for. So that's why I think all of these comments, and to a certain extent, a lot of these people who took the time and trouble to contribute, they're the kind of people who should be kind of called into the College of Policing and have a big sit down, a big brainstorming event, and come away with something that's relevant for each rank, whether that includes an interview or not, and it will from time to time, because not everybody agrees with the fact that, you know, if you're going to sign someone off in an organisation, particularly in a leadership position, sometimes, even if it's just a short one, you want an interview. You want to be able to sit down and look someone in the eyes and have that quality time with them. And yes, if it's pressurised, it's pressurised. But as I'm hearing myself now, forces are shifting the emphasis a little bit more around to a conversation in which they are focused on the competencies. And again, I think sometimes that can be vague. What does that mean? We know what we mean by having a conversation. We know what we mean by being confident in that conversation and at ease in that conversation, and the fact that we're on a kind of ballpark of the competency and values framework. Now, not everybody finds that comfortable. So even within the context of splitting an interview into different dimensions, I podcasted recently about called Guess the Competency. And what that alluded to, and you can go across and listen to my podcast on that, was the fact that some forces are not telling candidates what the CVF competency is that the questions relate to. And that's a really interesting concept, because what are you doing if you don't know what it is? Some forces will say, this question is about the CVF competency. We are emotionally aware. And they'll then ask their question. Or this question is about the CVF competency. We are analytical. and then they'll ask the question. Others are asking the question, and you have to guess what the competency is. They're assessing you on the CVF, but you've got to guess which one it is. And I think that is, well, that's for you to listen to and make sense of what you think about that. I'm actually currently writing a blog on it at the moment. I've done the podcast, as I say, but it seems to be kicking in because there's more than one force doing it. So I think, why are they doing it? Are they doing that to frustrate and annoy candidates? I don't think they are. Are they doing it to support candidates? I think they are. Are they getting it wrong? It remains to be seen, but certainly from the phone calls I've had, certainly in the last 2 weeks in relation to two particular forces, people have really got the collie wobbles over it. And that's why I did that podcast, you know, guess the competency, to kind of reassure them that there is a way around that, and that is to prepare to a depth and breadth of preparation that I encourage people to do. And once they kind of get that into their head, that's the same as the exam, you know, 2 or 3 months of prep, you'll feel much better, more confident, more informed, and more aware of the role requirements. So, but in terms of, you know, the way things are for officers sitting down on the other side of that interview table at the moment, it isn't the same as you go across different forces. Even though the panels, the HR teams are there to support people in the best way, they're not always getting the best out of people. And that's what essentially an interview is there to do, is to have a look at the individual. Have they done an amount of work to be informed? And that can be as simple as, you know, what are the challenges facing our force at the moment? And how are you going to help the force by leading your teams in tackling those problems? Now, that's a fair, consistent question that could be asked across any force, whether you ask that as an interview question, a presentation, or a briefing question. And that's where I have an issue with people saying, well, we don't like any parts of promotion. We just want to carry on acting or being temporary and just do a nice little sideways move into a substantive position. And that isn't fair, because there are a lot of people that want that position, and there should be a competitive element or process or component before someone is made substantive. And no one has the easy answers to that. And I think we're still in the zeitgeist of it. So I think I'll probably wind it up now, because I could go on like this forever. But I would just encourage you, if you get a chance, to pop on over to LinkedIn and have a look at that comment by the Chief Constable, Dr. Richard Lewis of Dyfed Powys, and have a look at some of the really helpful and constructive comments in. I think all of them should go into a big box, a big ideas box. They should be discussed by the College of Policing. They should be included and then explicitly put aside with some reason as to why it's not relevant, current, affordable, you name it. But there's certainly some really good things in. And although I said what I said earlier on about the military, you know, the military is very good when it inducts people into the organisation, the standards. And I've alluded to this before. We should be doing that with sergeants as well. Yes, we want diversity amongst sergeants, but we also want them to become the best sergeants, the best managers, the best supervisors, and ultimately one day the best leaders they can be. And there has to be this process in place to enable them to do it. To get them there, I don't think it really matters what the process is, so long as it's justifiable and fair and affordable. But it's the most important thing is, once they're in there, how are they supported going through? And that will knock on through the other ranks. Okay, so I'm going to bring it to a close now, because I could quite gladly do what I've been doing now, 38 minutes in my dulcet Brummy tones. But I would like to thank the Chief Constable, if he gets around to listening to this. I know all Chief Constables are busy, but that was a really good question to ask in the zeitgeist of where promotion is at the moment. I don't know what triggered it or what his thinking was around that, but it certainly attracted a lot of comments. And if you have any comments to make, you know, by all means, leave them in the podcast notes at the end. And if you want to use my platform to talk about this more, or to be interviewed, and whether that's anonymously, or you want to do a guest post, a guest blog post or podcast, I'll be happy to accommodate you with that. So until my next podcast, take care and stay safe.
If you made it this far, thanks for listening, and I hope you found that helpful. Let me know your views in the podcast details and Q&A section, or by tweeting me, or Xing me, as it is, at @rank_success. If you or a colleague have something interesting to contribute on policing, promotion, and or leadership, by all means, please get in touch. I'm always happy to share my platform to promote a diverse range of perspectives in policing whilst creating informative content for you. If you like this podcast, please consider becoming a subscriber. Not only will you be helping to ensure I can continue creating free content for everyone, but for just $4.99 a month, you'll also get a load of great stuff on top. This no-hassle, cancel-anytime offer provides extra subscriber-only episodes, priority access to all new episodes, and access to the best of my back catalogue. Should you want to go further and hit the ground running, you'll also receive an exclusive 25% discount on my market-leading structured promotion materials to help focus your effort. If you want in-person support, check out my website for upcoming masterclass dates. I only do a few a year, but they're action-packed with targeted support. You'll leave with great clarity on your force promotion process and with all the tools you need for success. Attendees most often describe the day as inspiring, informative, and motivating. Others have said it cuts through the fear of fog, confusion, and nerves, and one went so far as to say it's the best money I ever spent on my own promotion development. Gave me the right frame of mind and motivation to succeed, second to none. So all the best in your career aspirations. You can see a suite of support on my website at ranksuccess.co.uk, plus my popular free blogs at policepromotion.blog. Until next time, take care and stay safe.